And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's been a satisfying weekend, I think, watching the preliminary finals. You know, there's no Richmond involved, but is it wrong to take pleasure from the misfortune of others?
Well, of course not. But we were recording this on Sunday morning, and I'm sitting in a very similar spot to the time when I remember we recorded in person our podcast after the 2019 grand final.
Very so croaky, happy podcast.
Yes, we were about to go out and get some takeaway coffee and enjoy the weekend, the Sunday papers, which I still all have copies of.
Yeah, me too.
Good times. But it is a reminder how fragile and fleeting these things are, isn't it, Nick?
Oh, yeah. And hard, you know. Friend of the show, Simon Wallace, tweeted about it. Just, you know, flags are hard to win. When are Port Adelaide going to have a better shot than consecutive home preliminary finals against teams that have been on the road for weeks, if not months? Like, yeah, it's elusive.
It does appear that actually being in a bubble helps teams.
I definitely think it can. Yeah,
and it happened in the NRL as well, and the netball. So it's not just a small sample size phenomena unique to the AFL. But either way, completely, you sort of Port were favourites at times during the year. Geelong looked like favourites at times during the year, and it just makes me so profoundly grateful that out of our four highly competitive years, we came away with three flags. Like, it's extraordinary when you think about it, because
we look at 2018 as the one that got away because, you know, we were top of the ladder all year, and then, you know, favored in the Collingwood game. But yeah, it's, you shouldn't take it for granted. I mean, is another lesson never to take seriously Geelong's finals chances with this squad again. But yeah, it's quite the weekend.
It's just a reminder that since basically 2000, you never have at the very best team in the AFL has a 1 in 4 chance of winning a premiership. So the as I said, we've been extraordinarily blessed that we've had a Michael Jordan-esque run in the finals of almost always winning. So it makes me appreciate it so much. Of course, we hope it's not over, and we'll talk about that in a sec. But other than the greatly enjoying Geelong losing, also Geelong and Port losing was the perfect result for our draft pick, which will now be after the two likely father sons. What's the pick likely to be, Nick?
So it'll be pick 17. So all the I feel like the draft pick has already paid for itself in the pleasure we all derived from death riding Geelong this year. But
it gave us a justification for the mean petty approach that we would have taken anyway,
and it gave us even more justification. But in pure draft pick terms, we traded pick 20. In last year's draft for what's almost certainly going to be pick 17 in this draft. And look, the difference between those two picks isn't a lot. I mean, it's I think there's a sense that we like, well, for last year there wasn't a player we really liked in our pick. There'd been a few picked just before us who we would have taken. So, you know, we do get a chance to get a guy we want, but it's also, you know, draft picks give you a lot more flexibility to trade for players. You can get involved in pick swaps for future value. Like, that, it just gives you a lot more options. It's been a fun trade already.
It's been a fun trade. It's far too early to judge whether it was actually a good thing or not, but I've certainly enjoyed the process of it, and as you rightly point out, I would have been death riding Geelong anyway as our arch rivals and the team that it feels like the rules would change for the benefit. And it turns out they're just not good enough under any circumstances. But Nick, the point about, just if we could transition, if we can just move off Schadenfreude for a second, move on to AFL Trade Weeks. And we're doing the second half of our player wrap. That will be the bulk of the podcast. But before we do that, there's been a bit of trade rumours. But before we do that, Nick, I'd just like you to start your own trade rumour. There's an interesting idea that you raised with me that the Bulldogs might be interested because of young Darcy's son coming out. They will need to accumulate picks and might be interested in trading out of their first rounder.
Yeah, so the sort of the dual impact of the Bulldogs making the grand final and their pick dropping down. So they'll Sam Darcy is almost certain to be top five, if not top three. The Bulldogs will get a big points deficit if they, when they match the bid. So what makes a lot of sense for them is to trade both this year's first round draft pick, which will be probably around pick 19, trade that and some picks from next year to get enough later picks that they can use to match the bid on Darcy. And I think we're a very obvious choice, though, having the extra picks in the second and third round. I think that's quite possible. Three first round draft picks would be fun.
Yeah, so and then makes sense that perhaps we, when we have so many picks, that we want to have one or two less just for list management purposes.
Yeah, and to move for high to grade. Move some forward to next year makes some sense as well.
Yeah, so interesting one, and one to keep an eye out. And one of the other off-season stories, which Nick, you knew I would have followed closely, is there was a quite factual and well-sourced story in The Age about Marvia Chol and CCJ. What was your key takeout from that? Not surprising, I'd say.
Yeah, look, it's the flip side to the Shea Bolton situation, where I never really got worried, even with the Ralph Carr of it all, because there was never a team really strongly linked to Bolton, but yeah, it does feel like the Suns have made an offer to CCJ that's a fair bit more than what we have financially. So yeah, I think that feels like there's one where there's smoke and fire.
And interestingly, there was no mention of Marbs being offered a contract by Richmond in the story, but I wonder if that changes if CCJ accepts the Suns' offer. But there was a hole in the Marbs. There was lengthy analysis about CCJ's choices, whereas Marbs just said that Essendon and North are interested in him, or is that CCJ? So look, good on Marbs. It'd be a shame to lose them both. I mean, we'll discuss it.
It's a definite list hole. Look, in the Suns have sort of the obvious draft capital to pull it off. I don't think pick three will be involved, but they've got even with a pick swap, it's just very rare to get a player plus pick for high pick types. Not unprecedented. Dom Tyson trade was one, but something like, you know, the Suns will have pick 21. That and something else feels a lot more realistic.
Yeah, so we wind up being about chalk for all those years we put in for CCJ's development,
which would be a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and as someone who owns a lot of land on CCJ Island, I'm going to be very upset that I built some pretty permanent structures on that land emotionally, and it's going to be very sad to see him play for another team. But such is life. Is there anything before we start getting into the player wrap? Is there any other news that took your eye, Nick?
No, not particularly. Good to see some of the players showing off their vaccination certificates. And the clubs got involved with that a bit as well. But yeah, it is the American baseball team that I follow literally has Vax Up printed on its field. Like, I think we seem a fair way off that level of commitment.
Yeah, the AFL and the club seem a bit half-hearted, to be honest. Like, definitely no one's doubting that they're pro it, but they're a very powerful cultural institution, and they're not afraid to lean in on a lot of other cultures, and this is sort of...
No, and they're incredibly powerful incentive to have large groups of people to be able to gather together again in a safe fashion.
Yeah, good point. Anyway, my favourite thus far has been Rioli's pitcher, the Indigenous Health pitcher, which I thought was very well done.
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, this pod is friendly for vaxxed, and you're even AZ, Zach, vax Nick, so you're doubly meritorious. moving on. So I believe, Nick, in the player wrap that we got up to, I got up to Lambert. Is there anyone before? Should I crack on with that?
No, I got we're just the one on my list. We're kicking off with Jack Graham. Who's the Jack Graham into Dylan Grimes for you?
Okay, so Lambert.
No. We've got to do Graham and Grimes first.
Oh, you're right. I've just completely stuffed that up. I got fixated on Lambert, and I was preparing what I was going to say in my head. My apologies. Mm. Well, Graham's obviously first. You go.
Okay. It's interesting. Jack Graham's had a really good year. Performed. Very respectfully in the best and fairest. Like, he's come second in the actual best and fairest, and seventh in the even more prestigious Richmond Tiger Talk votes per game best and fairest. And yet, like, it still wasn't quite the breakout that I think we hoped for. Like, in between starting the season off with 33 disposal game against Carlton, what's probably going to be a 3 Brownlow vote game against North with 36 disposals, there was an awful lot of sort of in the middle games, and not in a particularly good way. He had 12 games in between 15 and 19 disposals. He averaged 19 disposals for the year. But it is interesting, him as a player. He's been an elite pressure player since he started. His tackle inside 50 numbers are very good. He's our third leading inside 50 player, and he rates his kicking inside forward 50 rates very well as well. But it is for someone, you know, who looks like a bull. He's not a particularly strong clearance player, and he's definitely not a centre square player. So it's sort of he's evolved into a role. Sort of not quite what a very useful role, but sort of not quite one that we expected, I think.
I think Dimmer used the phrase "he's a transition mid" during the year, which
that is a good phrase. Yeah,
and he's an accumulator now, and your point about the centre square is very true. So it's just the question with Jack, and actually that really nice summary. I completely agree with that. You know, there were some definite highs and there's proof of concept on one level, but you know, he absolutely owned the ball against two terrible teams. But there's a lot of there's a lot of mediocrity there for an accumulating mid that really him playing his kind of role. And I'm glad you mentioned he's a beautiful deliverer inside the 50. He's maybe the best kick to someone on a lead on the team. But the sort of, if you look at the kind of people who are really good at his role around the AFL, they get more of the football consistently. And the sort of a question is, we know he's good enough to be on a premiership team. That's no one's doubting that. Is he good enough to be a sort of the fourth best midfielder on a team that can win a final? And I don't think that's proven yet. I think there's still some doubt. But
he's still only 23 years old.
And I would say he's getting. Did you see noticeable improvement this year? I would have guessed without doing the numbers. Yeah.
His numbers definitely tracked up. Interestingly, driven almost entirely by uncontested possession rather than contested possession. I think that's, he's improving. You know, he's really high character kid, and I'm extremely glad. We've fended off various attempts to lure him back to South Australia, or to Carlton. I think there's both scope to do more. And I think it's okay to want more as well.
Yeah, I think you know, we've all heard the certain level of fan frustration with him at times, and he's. The fact that he hasn't really hit the next level, and we hear that, and there's some evidence for that as well. But still, and moving right along to someone that absolutely every fan loves, Dylan Grimes. Now, I'd just like to make the point that, I mean, it's fairly redundant to praise someone's season when they've won the Jack Dyer Award, but it wasn't just a career award. He did hit career high in disposal, intercepts, score involvements of all things. Second best in his career in contested marks, meters gained as well. So he was more attacking with the football. So look, he won the Jack Dyer. It's self-explanatory. He's a legend of the club. If they didn't give away life memberships to everyone now that they give them to. Give him one. He should be an AFL Hall of Famer. He's an absolute champion. Long may his hamstrings hold and we get three or four more years out of him, because I love watching him play, and he's an absolute delight and a stalwart of the club.
I know. And human, it is unthinkable, looking back on 2010 or 2011, 2012, frankly. Then young Dylan Grimes and Dave Asprey, perennially injured and unreliable, turning into the bedrocks of multiple premiership teams. Honestly, the only worry I have about him is that he has other stuff going on in his life, which might cause him to retire a bit earlier than he would, because, otherwise I want him to play for Richmond forever.
One would wonder, Nick, whether COVID has reduced the how lucrative the winery is. but perhaps he needs a few more years to pay for whatever expensive machinery that I'm sure that wineries require.
Yeah. I do, without slighting him at all, I do think we need to draft someone who can fill his role in a couple of years. But yeah, in the meantime, let's appreciate Dylan for the great player he is.
You're starting to suspect that Garthwaite might not be a like-for-like replacement. Moving on.
Yep. Dasha Hawley up next. I won't relitigate everything we've said about him before, but just it is worth all the off-field stuff and the leadership and what a well-respected team man he is, but just the incredible durability as well, which, he's been injury prone the last couple of seasons, but he's so 11 seasons at Richmond. Last year in the, with shortened games was the only time he was ever below 20 disposals a game. He averaged 19 games a year over his Richmond career. Even this year, third in the AFL in running bounces per game, second on the team in disposals. Right, you know, incredible career.
Yet nothing more needs to be said. Couldn't agree more. And if you haven't already, read the Wally Darley book.
Yeah, and listen to our interview.
surprisingly enough, he's very articulate and interesting. Lambert. So, I don't know about you, Nick, but I had A. Cane Lambert. There's not that much to say because his statistical profile is very similar to what it's been in past years. Contested possessions are down slightly, but most of the other key indicators sort of indicating that he was at the same level he has been for the last 4 years. And that's a very good thing. And you could see it in the games that of the 13 games he played, he notably brought a lift to the team. You could feel it was like getting, you know, it was like we were just 10% better with him in the team. The interesting thing that I didn't realise about him, Nick, is I didn't realise in our premiership run, we sort of, I don't know about you, but I had this perception of him being a little bit injury prone. And I think it was because he got injured slightly in the finals. But since 2000, including 2017, he's been above 20 games every season except this season. So he's actually been very durable. So, okay, this year was disappointing, and it's a worry when outside mids start to get multiple soft tissue injuries. But there's still a lot of hope that he can come back to a 20 game season next year because there's no sign of when he's on the pitch of any decline.
And repeatedly in this year and in other years, when he has missed time, we instantly play better as soon as we're back. I think
totally.
The Liam Baker did some good work in the Cane Lambert role this year, but can't help but be a better team if you've got both of them. So. Tom Lynch, up next. And looking, you know, when you just look at his output, without all the noise, ball winning pretty much the same, top 10 in the AFL in marks inside 50, contested marking off just a tad, and I think particularly, when he had the knee issue earlier in the year, he wasn't quite launching at the ball as well as he was. But mostly the only problem with Tom Lynch's season, and it wasn't much of a problem, you know, seventh in the best and fairest on votes per game, which I think is his best effort. For Richmond, he didn't have the kicking boots on. 35 goals, 33 on the season, and you know who knows how, you know, people get the yips, and you never know that they'll be able to kick better in future. But it feels like a correctable problem.
Yeah, he misses a lot of easy shots. And that's hopefully correctable because statistically he's done it before and other people can. I was reflecting, and it's just being a prisoner at the moment, but there was a moment early in the Port game where Port were in trouble. They hadn't got the last night's Port Western Bulldogs final. They hadn't got the ball inside 50 yet. And they got a kick to centre half forward, and Dixon was competing, and he had a fair run at the football, and there was a Western Bulldog in front of him, and the Bulldog, a shorter Bulldog, it was a lovely mark, but took the mark in front, and Dixon didn't bring it to ground. And it was just one of those little things that Tom Lynch never lets happen. And he's on a huge contract. It is a worry that he's going to be around for a long time and the form line's slipping slightly. But there are still a lot of awful good. There's a lot of awfully good things he does, as pointed out by his top 10 finish in the best and fairest. And if he gets improves his goal kicking, there's no reason why. Look, no matter what, we'll probably be wailing and gnashing about his contract in his last 2 years. But that's
because the contract is backloaded, particularly. So it is and it was backloaded with a view to the salary cap going up faster than it may well do, given events in the industry.
There's still plenty of reasons why to think he's not washed, and there's still plenty of good football left.
No, and the only thing worse than, and he does attract a lot of media attention, but right now, would you take Tom Lynch on a 4-year contract? Hell yeah. Not at the backloaded money we're going to pay, but it was the price of doing business, and it worked out really well. and it just gives you the task of identifying someone who can be a second tall forward and play a complementary role to Lynch. Finding those guys is about 15 times easier than finding another Tom Lynch in the draft.
True.
There's not a single key forward in this draft who I think projects as a real number one key forward.
I don't want to delay us, but there was an interesting point a friend of ours made that who's financially minded, that unless you're a sort of goal kicking mid like Bont and Dusty, that the difference between your accumulating mid and the next best accumulating mid really isn't worth as much as those guys get paid. But with key forwards, the difference between your above average key forward and the replacement value key forward, who's usually awful, is much greater. And so if anything, key forwards are almost underpaid, and they do get paid a lot. We don't need to debate it now, but it's an interesting idea. We'd be a lot better to assess for this if they actually publicly release contract data. Anyway, moving on. Ryan Mansell. Not that much to say statistically, because he's not, he averages 11.
Not a big ball winner, although he got better during the year.
He did, but he averaged 11 disposals a game. He was clearly given the best opposition small forward, or at least a good one. That's the role he played in South Australia as well. The biggest compliment was he played, and he played 13 games. So, that's a lot.
And we've had more success than this than any other club, with Stack and Mansell and Matty Parker in the mid-season draft. Like we've really been getting value out of some of these, really fringe guys on the list. So it's a huge effort. Given that lack of, overlooked in two national drafts and rookie drafts to make that step up to senior football, it's a really good achievement.
Absolutely, and obviously he's an utter prick, and he's a Northern Tasmanian, so both things that get a lot of love
to his opponent.
To his opponent, yeah, sorry. Two things which are unrelated, by the way, but get a lot of love on this podcast.
Yeah, and look, it is, it is the type of thing where you can't, he's the type of player where you can't take anything for granted. But I also, he doesn't strike me as the type of guy who will take things for granted. Like he'll work really hard and give himself every opportunity to have a good career.
I haven't yet seen the athletic. Like you're right. He's not perfect. No reason to get carried away. But I haven't seen the obvious athletic flaw that would tell me that he won't make it.
Yeah. Look, he is physically slight. And yeah, he occasionally, I think I remember Lincoln McCarthy throwing him aside in a marking contest.
Yep.
With these. So yeah, that's definitely a concern. He averaged 19 disposals a game in the VFL, and the graph trended upwards there as well. So yeah, love having him on the list.
Okay. I think we need to pick up the pace, Nico. This is going to be a three-parter.
So, Dusty. He's adjusting for game time. His stats are absolutely identical this year to last year. You know, top 10 in the AFL, goal assists, inside 50s. He's not... his numbers are slightly down on 2017. In 2019, but look, he spends a bit more time forward than he used to. He spends a bit more time on the ground than he used to, actually. But he's such a weapon, and we look so much worse without him. I know. Really, apparently he's lost a fair bit of weight, and is weighing up if he should attempt to play at a lighter weight next year, but. Oh, we are just blessed to have him.
Going back to the point about the Michael Jordan shining brightest when the lights are on. We are also blessed that Dusty has played his best footy in the biggest moments, because that's actually hard, and he's consistently done it. And yeah, it's a point that sort of you remember the 2020 grand final so well that you sort of, and then in the regular season when he's not always like that, you kind of go, well, he's dropping off. Well, actually, he's not dropping off. He's like, you're just remembering the best games, which we are lucky enough to, and the peaks have like all the greats, the peaks often, you know, it's what makes them special, is they shine brightest when it matters the most. So I think the only thing, you know, the kidney is a serious injury. And hopefully he will come back at least 95% from it. But we'll only know when we see next year.
The prognosis is good, apparently. But, yeah.
Look, it's a
serious injury. You never know.
Would we be told anything different, though? So, anyway, look, we love him. We can't wait. Every year that he plays on the Richmond team, it's a delight. And long may it continue.
Yeah.
His namesake, Martin, also not spelt the same, obviously.
His name and early number sake.
Yes. Nice touch. So he's two games in the seniors. Probably some people would like to forget his first game against Port. 12 disposals in one, 14 disposals in his other game. Only had three clearances in total, only had three tackles in total. So it was a pretty quiet... I liked his Anthony Miles impersonation. Very quick on boot to ball. And I think I made this point in the podcast before that it's just a hat kick out of the midfield, but if we did that for every centre square clearance this year, we would have done a hell of a lot better, because a hat kick out of the midfield is a lot better than getting beaten, which was our default outcome from centre clearances this year. So promise not outstanding upside, but the interesting inside mid prospect. He had 10 matches in the VFL, which he had 25 disposals and 6 tackles. So that's all right. And as you pointed out, very little development last year. So, you know, he'll get another year.
Definitely. We'll see. He has already, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he has. It wasn't... but... He'll need to get better, obviously. Thank you, Captain Obvious. But we'll see. There's a bit of hope. My hope for him relative to his draft position, and that probably hasn't gone up or down. It's still at par. So we'll see how we go.
Yeah. Useful depth piece. K-Mac. 17 games, 15.5 disposals, I think just a really consistent, valuable role player. Like he gets a lot of meters, games for those disposals. He runs super hard both ways. Gets good numbers of intercepts. I think, you know, it's the wingman role has evolved, and he's the diametric opposite of the Aaron Fiora style wingman. But yeah, and we love him, and he's re-signed for a couple more years. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think his strength in the contested game becomes more obvious. Like we've always talked about it, but I think it becomes more obvious with each passing year. Now, Nick Miller.
Mm.
Not that much to say. Look, we talked a lot about his single game in the Hawks. He had 6 disposals, but he had 4 intercepts, which is okay. We shall see. We don't even know if he'll be on the list next year, but if we lose, at this stage, I think we'd both agree we'd keep him ahead of Garth because, and I think there's a little bit of that, it's just we haven't seen as much of it. But, look, we're both really happy for him.
There was at least some proof of concept of him
totally
being functional and useful at senior football, and of giving us depth as someone who can play on the really big-bodied key forwards,
exactly.
Behind Bolter.
I didn't want to repeat exactly what I said against the Hawks, but it's exactly true that he's tall and he's strong, and there's a reason why everyone in the AFL is tall and strong in the key positions. It's a default characteristic you much have, and then you can build from there. But if you're not those two things, and Garth unfortunately is neither, relative to other AFL athletes, it makes it so hard to play our field. So good on Miller, and I for one would be I definitely would not have said this 4 weeks ago, but I'd be quite happy if he stayed on the list.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely so. Paddy Naish up next for me. Look, we talked about him on a recent show, but he's an absolute star in the VFL. You know, 29 disposals a game, averages a goal a game, kicks long, beautiful goals, really popular and well regarded as a teammate. And the step up to senior footy is hard. Never quite developed physically, probably as much as he needed to. I'm really sad about this one. Sad, but not surprised. You're on mute, Andy.
Apologies. It's just hard. We talked about this. It is sad. We've kind of gone through him already. It is just hard. His game is so outside. It's a very hard way to make the AFL. We're almost repeating the comments of the previous player. It's just that there are some default things that you need in the AFL, and that's why we got him for fairly late pick. But look, he's got so many likable things, and he'll always have that tackle on Dusty in the squad match. So good on him. Love him for to land on an AFL list. I suspect he won't, but I'm sure he'll have lots of great footy in front of him because, as you say, he dominates the AFL. VFL. Nick Nank.
Mm.
Now, you know Nick Nank loves an interview and is always sort of waxing lyrical.
such a media tart.
Oh, g'day, Jono. G'day, Marty. How are you going today? You know, doing drive time radio.
BT. Right. All right.
Yeah, just talking about his renovations, whatever. But sort of have heard that he's really been working on his round the ground work play. Mm. And guess what? It clearly paid off this year. Is that he easily on all the metrics of round the ground work. It was disposals, intercepts, clearance, contested possessions, especially was up by far. Sadly, they don't keep a stat on this, but I imagine putting the hurt on the opposition. I think it's his best he's ever been.
I think he's really perfected it.
He was
always good.
People think it's just being a bully, but it's not. There's actually a real skill to hitting people consistently and not giving away free kicks too often. And when he does give away a free kick, he makes it absolute as hard as possible as it can be without giving away the 50. Look.
Has he ever been suspended? I don't remember.
No, look, I think Nick, he is a Stradivarius of on-field violence. It's an art, it's a craft, and he has mastered it. And I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, but I'm a ruckman too. And
really?
Yeah, no. And look, people don't realize how hard it is to do what Nank does, and I'm in awe of his skill.
Keeping Nank on the park is the only question on Nank. Look, hopefully next year we get Soldo back so that he can shoulder some of the load, and you know, maybe we can rest him for the odd game. But yeah, he's an asset to the club.
Well, actually, of the last 3 years, he's played 37 of 73 possible games.
Oh dear!
So it's 50% basically.
It's possibly even worse than I would have thought.
Yeah, it's pretty grim when you look at it, and you notice it more when Soldo's not there. So because we forget in 19 that he missed a huge chunk of the year and then just came back, and we noticed him through the finals and then just hit the gas right at the end. But yep, if he gets fit because of his round the ground work, He's not an All-Australian level, but Nangadi's best is pushing Rowan Marshall level competence around the ground. Rowan Marshall.
One of the things about this weekend, Port hosting a preliminary final was an excuse to think about how awesome Nank was in last year's preliminary final.
Yeah, completely. Like I think he's sort of top five or six in the AFL at his best, but he just needs to be fit.
Biggie Newen. Everything we've said about...
This is going to be hard.
Second year draftees, 7 games of organised football in 2 years, averaged 11 disposals a game and 5 marks. Look, showed a few signs in pre-season, had one really good preseason intra-club game, I think. But yeah, look, he came in as a raw athletic late draft pick, and now he's a raw and experienced VFL player. Like, it's really the list decision on him is really hard.
And I
think so too. But I think it's unfortunate they've got rid of the rule where you can. Where you can automatically move someone to the rookie list. I think you've got to wait till after the national draft to do so now. But he feels like a rookie list project at this stage.
Fair enough. I guess it's really, he's played so little footy, it's really hard to know. I mean, the coaches seem to love him, they rave about him, but that might be partly to pump up his confidence. But.
Is it? And I have heard, like, when he was injured early on in pre-season, but then when he came out, like, he's apparently quite a big outgoing personality. So, yeah.
But, yeah, it's really up because he's played so little football that we've seen. It's really hard to know. Nick Parker. Was he, of any footballer I can remember coming to Richmond recently, is he the most about... Did he deliver almost exactly what was written on the box?
I think so.
So he was advertised as a hard tryer, fast running, bit of niggle, doesn't get enough of the footy, inaccurate shot for goal, and a bit agricultural.
Rough around the edges with his disposal.
Bit agriculture. And 13 disposals, 5 tackles a game. He kicked 3-3 for goal in his 6 games. He was basically everything that we expected.
Yeah. And playing again for South Fremantle in the Waffle finals, apparently is, you know, well, he asked for one thing, but also, you know, keeping sweet with South Fremantle when we poached their best player.
I think that's great. I think, you know, AFL clubs should do that sort of as a rule with the mid-season draft guys. They went through pre-season. They have financial limitations too. So they, you know, Parker would have been a reasonable part of their pre-season planning because he's their top or one of their top three paid players. He never brought his family over from Perth apparently. So. Yeah, we'll see what happens in his future, but good luck to him in the finals.
Yeah, do you think he stays on?
Honestly, I think that the sort of I would not because of where we need something more. You know, we need to have that spot for an upside player. So I would say, hat tip, thank you for your hard work and move on. But does he play on? I would say it's probably 55-45 yes.
Mm. Yeah, I would probably lean yes. I think we'll have a couple of spots free on the rookie list anyway, and he's proven to be useful depth, so yeah.
Yeah, but he's a grown man. He might not want to do that.
Yeah, true. Look, yeah, and relocating his family on a rookie salary is not a easy decision. Speaking of the challenge of relocating families on a rookie salary, I think it, you know, Marlon Pickett's story is very well told. You know, not least in having a book come out at the end of, I think, when he played 21 games of senior AFL football. But it is an incredible story. On the field, I think between Pickett and K-Mac, we have the most least ball-winning, most physical pair of wingmen in the league. His running stats, you know, he like K-Mac, covers a ton of ground, has really high level 2A running stats. His ball winning was up quite a bit this year, 16 disposals a game, up from 12 last year. He cracks in very hard, you know, has the occasional ill-disciplined mistake, but yeah, he's got himself a 2-year contract. He's got himself a contract through the end of next year, and yeah, I think we're definitely a better club for having him around.
Yeah, and sort of they're not him and Park all through. They're not the same, and you know it's easy comparison because they're friends. They're sort of it's a vaguely similar list spot because you can shuffle around other people, but that sort of mature depth player who gives you hardness and strength at the ball. And so you wonder whether maybe one of those two is enough. But yeah, I completely agree with your key point there about we are a better club for him on. And
not to be discounted as well that how many other AFL midfielders would jump centre bounce ruck taps against the likes of Maxi Gawn.
Yeah, and speaking
he's not afraid.
And speaking of hard men, he's very much he's number two in the club after Nank, and there's daylight third in my view in the ferocity of the way they bring hits. So moving on, Nick, to Prestia. So when we probably need to, again, pick up the speed. The story is so obvious, it barely needs repeating, but it's his second consecutive year with only 9 games. But when he plays, he's clearly our best clearance player. We drop off without him. Our average clearances are much better with him. He's actually quite high in turnovers per game, which is a bit of a worry. But I think the main thing with Prestia is he just...
That's always been the Dion Prestia. Like, I remember researching him before he came to the club. He was he won a lot of ball. He covered a lot of ground. And he coughed the ball up a bit. It's always been the Dion Prestia MO.
Yeah. And so it is what it is. We just hope he gets his body right. And we hope that round 23 Hawthorn withdrawal was a precaution rather than a sign of a more serious injury.
Oh, surely. You know, one of 9 outs. Yeah. Yeah. They're keeping him on, like Nank, they're keeping him on the field. Question is the only one I think we need to worry ourselves with. Ralph Smith. I think he strikes me as being a, you know, without any firm evidence to say so, he strikes me as being a popular kid. And look, he's a fair like Naish. He's a beautiful outside player who really needs to put on some more body strength and mass. He's playing at 17 kilos this year. Winning enough contested ball is a challenge, but he's a beautiful runner. He really covers ground. You know, the North Melbourne game where he had 376 metres gained off only 17 disposals, like that real run and carry, had good intercept numbers as well, kicked some lovely goals. Like there's bits and pieces of a real AFL player there. But yeah, the challenge of putting it all together, addressing his weaknesses, yeah, that's the next step for him.
Completely, but very fun debut, and he had a bit of luck in some of his early games, but there's plenty to like there, and I don't know if he's popular in the team like you speculated, but he's definitely popular amongst fans, and you can see why. And lovely, just...
They got around his goals.
Cool. Most of his goals were bloody amazing. Anyway, moving on. Jack Ringwald. It's just... There is just no evidence of decline. You know, the small things you notice, but when you sort of...
he shouldn't give up his career for common shots.
No. And Nick, since 2007, so quite a while ago, Jack Ringwald has only had 2 seasons where he's played less than 20 games, and in those seasons he played 18 and 13 games. So 2019 was the 13-game season, but other than that, he's just this year he was 22 games, so he played every game, Nick. The year before, 21 and 18, 24, 17, 23, and even in the so-so years, he played every game in 16. You know, he played in 15 and 14, he played every game. He's just, for a guy who seems every year to need to have his whole body replaced with injury, he's just been incredibly consistent. Nick, there was a big statistical drop-off when Lynch came to the club. You can see the moment the 18 to 19, there's like a hard red line in his statistics and where he's obviously moved to a secondary role. But other than that, if you look fairly and impartially at his statistics, this year there was no evidence of drop-off. He's actually higher in goals per game than he has been since any time since Lynch arrived, and maybe that was partly because Lynch missed games. But he's getting plenty of disposals. He's tackling at the same rate he's ever had. His contested ball is getting down slightly, but it's still there. There's absolutely nothing. He's played 13 seasons with 20-plus games. There's absolutely no reason why he not only shouldn't play on, but, you know, there's a 40% chance he'll play on the year after that. Nick, you're on mute.
He's been relentlessly consistent and productive. Yeah, and you know, credit to the club. I'm not sure what else we can say. Dan Rioli, very much a season in two halves. The up to round 13, he played 11 games, averaged 10 disposals, just under a goal a game. But yeah, definitely. And while he's never been a big ball winner as a small forward, it felt like he wasn't the player that he was a couple of years ago. So dropped to the VFL and then very noticeably moved to defence. Last seven games of the year, average 20 disposals a game, 5.5 intercepts, and really played. Once he settled in, he played really good football, and I didn't. I think we kept him away from the really strong one-on-one marking players, but otherwise, he seemed to hold up on the defensive matchup really well. Like, you know, in Dan we trust.
Yeah, there was no. I didn't notice any moments where he looked lost or he was obviously getting picked on. I really like it. I like the explosiveness off the back line, and it sort of that run and carry that extra 15 minutes. I think it really matters, and it means you kick better because you can get into space. Hooley, of course, was a master at this, but he did it through more hard running. But Dan can do it in almost any circumstance. His delivering in the forward line wasn't always great. He's not. He can miss weight his kick sometimes, and probably most rational brain says that's probably not getting better at this stage of his career. Fan brain says, well, it was his first year on the back flank, and now he'll do a preseason in the back flank, and it'll really help his development. So I think there's definitely an upside potential there. I don't think it's all Australian, thanks Rafkar, but I think he could be a more than adequate replacement for Hawley and earn himself a lot of money in his free agent year. Oh, his free agent year in 3 years, isn't it? When's his free agent year?
It is. Yep, 3 years.
Yep. Okay. Funnily enough, alphabetical order. Morris comes up.
Two years. I think. Yes, Morris Rioli Jr.
Look, he had two games. It was pretty. He had a goal in each. He didn't see much of the footy. Other than that, he got seven disposals total in the AFL. He averaged two tackles a game. Some spectacular tackles, and sort of a reminder of what young Dan was like. And in the VFL, he averaged 11 disposals a game. Here's the interesting one: six tackles. So that's a sign of activity, and 0.5 goals. Look, everyone knew it was going to be a very hard development year. He was coming. He was a raw prospect when he arrived at the club, but I think he's done really well in his first year. When you remember where he started from, the fact that he played in two senior games, is infinite credit to him, and he's a lot of fun. So I hope he keeps improving.
We'd be excited about him even without the surname, like the goal in the VFL where he literally ran half the length of the ground with the ball, showed off his pace. He's a shark when the other team have the ball in our forward line. We'll only get better as he gets physically stronger. Like, you know, we've already seen how he's improved physically in the last couple of years. Winning the ball enough to complement all that good defensive work's the next step for him.
Agreed. It's your play next.
Yep. So Jack Ross, he's only 20 years old, and somehow it feels like he's been around longer than that. But he was, and you know, he was quite young for his draft year, despite being relatively physically mature when he's picked. So I think that's context partly for what was, you know, maybe a bit of a disappointing season relative to expectations. 11 games, 14 disposals a game, you know, and 25 games over his career so far. But yeah, that he had a couple of good games off halfback against the Cats, where he played well. Particularly the one against the Hawks, where again I think he could well pull Brownlow votes there. But we kept him away, like Jack Graham. We kept him away from the centre bounce. But as that sort of that, like Jack Graham in that transition role where he's just making a lot of contests, he was pretty impressive in that. And I think when you consider his age as well, under contract for next year, yeah, something to work with.
Something to work with. I think you made the point it hasn't been the upward improvement that we all hoped, and he hasn't been the centre square player that we all hoped. But yeah, there were flashes of optimism there in what was a fairly inconsistent season. Ryan, tale of two seasons, really. There was the first half of the season where, look, he finished up averaging more than 2 goals a game in the VFL, so clearly a goal scorer and has that natural knack. And he kicked 17-7, Nick, which you'll be pleased with.
Respect, yeah.
Obviously, there was the disastrous senior debut, which doesn't need to be dwelt on. And then in the last 4 games in the VFL, where he got a bit of clear air because the other guys were playing elsewhere, he averaged above 30 hit-outs a game, which is no mean feat. So there's a little bit of everything there. There's goal kicking. There's a potential to hit out. He's still my biggest worry with him. Is he physically big enough to rack in the AFL consistently? We'll have to see. It still feels like he's very raw and very young because of how his physical size and his haircut. But he's actually not that young because he was a mature age draft pick. So I think there's something there, and I still haven't made up my mind about him, to be honest. I'm keeping an open mind, but there's definitely upside that could keep people excited.
Yeah, and I think that functionality as a forward is very useful, as you know, with both Chole and CCJ out of contract. And as you said, him performing pretty respectably at VFL level, not to the same level as those guys, but pretty good. Like I remember watching the Frankston game where he was first ruck most of the day, but then in our best marking target when he went forward as well. So yeah, that definitely needs to develop physically, but yeah, it was. Debut aside, I think it was a pretty successful first season. Jaden Short, next. It's honestly, I feel like it's hard to say what hasn't already been said. Like statistically, you know, nearly 25 disposals a game, which was a career high. He's very durable, 25 years old, so in the midst of his career, top 10 in the AFL in rebound 50s, metres gained, kicks, and bounces. So I think there's no doubting he had a very good season. I think it's notable he didn't poll higher in the best and fairest votes per game. He wasn't in the top 10. And what about that? Was a bit of a surprise, but maybe that was the coaches not being as happy with his defensive work. Because I think he's offensively he was super productive.
He was. I mean, the AFL ratings don't love him either. They don't. It's not the easiest role to play to get high ratings. But I think the coaches also know that, like, he's set up in good positions often to be offensive. Like, you know, the whole team is, you know, it looks for him. He is the release player. So there's a implicit marking down and going on just because he's playing in the role to shine. So, yeah, and the defensive efforts are, well, look, they're never going to be great for a player like Shorty. Like, he's not there to, he's making his money to be just good enough, like Basher was on the defensive end, and then he makes his money on the rebounds. So, yeah, after an amazing 2020, and he had an amazing grand final, I don't think he's kicked on, but he hasn't got worse either, so he's still a very good player. But I think the best and fairest says it best of all. Now, Nick, we've been doing this for almost 2 hours now, when you count our first episode, and this is the moment I've been looking forward to most. I'm a bit nervous, actually, because...
Yeah, a lot of pressure.
Yeah, there is. Ivan Soldo. Good that he's back running. Lovely photo. It was lovely. That Jeep retro photo with him and Bolter was lovely because, A, they both look like guys who played in the 1940s, and, B, it means that they were training that day. So we're pleased with his recovery. Now, Nick.
Was his injury the reason why we're not premiers again this year?
Close. We, in close games this year, we were one win, four losses, and one draw. Then I was pretty tight on what my definition was of a close game. I didn't count any games where we were sort of in the game, we got blown out late. But I did include the Suns game, which we lost by sort of about 10 points, but it was close right up to the last second. Now, if you look at those games, so that's six games. If we'd drawn, as most teams draw, they're 50-50 in close games. If we'd just been normal in close games that they were 50-50 for us, we would have finished seventh and would have played the Swans in a knockout final in Tassie, I believe, which would have been a lot of fun for our Tasmanian listeners. So all we needed to do was get up to win two more games of those six close games, which we could have done against the Hawthorn easily if we'd played our better players. So basically all we needed to do was win one more game of those close ones, which we had four opportunities to. So, Nick, in the Gold Coast game, we went 12-4 in the centre clearances when they were playing, 194-centimetre ruck.
191.
Yeah, oh God, it was even worse. In the West Coast game, you might remember Nick Nat kicked two goals, and we had disappearing marbs in the last quarter. In the Hawthorn match, we were done in the hit-outs 16-42. In the Freo match, marbs had another zero quarter last quarter. Now, on the flip side, as you could say, and this is not to pick on Marbs, like, it wasn't his fault. Like, he's our third stringer. This is not an anti-Marbs rant. This is, if we had have had someone like Nank, like Soldo, who's both very solid in the centre square, it's just his best rucking point, which was the biggest weakness all year, and also is quite respectable defensively, will track his opponent up and down and doesn't get beaten too often in contested marks in full forward, or three, he's not perfect. Just think if you have your normal second string ruck there, we easily win. We can easily get up those two more games. So that's my theory, that Ivan Solo's injury cost us a spot in the final eight.
Mic drop.
Yep, I'm done.
Yeah. Look, I just really hope. Well, it was a really serious injury. Multiple ligaments damaged. Yeah, I think it'd be great if you can have an uninterrupted preseason and a big crack at 22.
Yeah, and like just a like obviously Soldo fanboys aside, like it is a point that, you know, if we just draw an even in 50-50 games, which you normally do, and you look at the percentage, we're better on the percentage level ladder. Yeah, like we were unlucky this year.
Sydney Stack. It's hard to put into words the type of year that he's had. Over the past 12 months, like, you know, sometimes the football seems like the simple part for Sydney. But it's worth noting for a guy who literally spent the preseason in a Perth jail cell let's not talk about that. To go from that to he understandably had a slow start returning to senior football. When he did come back into the team from round 17, he's only averaged 12 disposals a game for his first three games back, and then averaged 23 disposals again for his last four, and just when you thought he was really making that halfback role his own, we throw him forward in the last quarter against Hawthorn, and he kicks two good goals. So the where does Sydney play best question gets opened again. But really, I hope that is the question we get to focus on with him. Like, I really hope he has a really good preseason, works hard, gets his fitness up, and just that football can provide him some structure in his life that's helpful.
Completely. And not to be forgotten, you know, the biggest thing that he's always struggled with is his fitness, and it would make such a difference to him this off-season to have a full pre-season. So love him. Wonderful. Football's much better, not just for Richmond. Football is better as a whole for Sydney Stack, having Sydney Stack in it. So we've got every finger crossed for him that he can keep that amazing form at the end of the year, which was so much fun to watch. I mean, the Fremantle game, he almost won it off his own boot. The Hawthorn game, he almost won it off his own boot. Hawthorn game, it was a brilliant cameo. So just a lot of fun. Nick, just quickly on Matty Parker, I just noticed that he won his South Fremantle won by 1 point in their first final. So Matty Parker probably made, and apparently he was good in the third quarter, so probably made the difference there. Us releasing him helped South Fremantle win a final. So nice for them.
Nice
and
good one.
Okay, last one for me, Nick. Vossi. 12 games was the least of his career. He's been fairly consistent otherwise. He had his highest disposal rate of his career. He had 18 a game. His clearances are never... He's never going to be a center clearance player. Just a cheap shot, but I know people like to talk about that. This is something that I'm not sure if we realised this, Nick, or we never talked about it much. He was actually first in the AFL in intercepts in 2020 on an aggregate figure.
Hmm.
And he was fifth.
I feel like we should have talked about that.
Yeah, and he was fifth in 2019. Obviously, they're both aggregate figures, so he didn't do so well this year because he only had 12 games. But yeah. And all his other numbers were perfectly on track this year, including an intercept. So, look, it's just a matter of being fit and healthy. He remains a champion. And there's, again, you wouldn't expect it because he's still in his 20s, but there's no sign of drop-off.
No. Top 10 best and fairest on votes per game. And another leading member of the, oh, God, we missed him when he wasn't there team.
Yeah, nice support.
So that's it. Thanks to everyone who's stuck about so far. Funnily enough, we love talking about Richmond players. next show we'll do. We'll Depends what happens in trade period. We might do a standalone show or wrap it together with a draft preview. But yeah, on with the off season. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Coming to slow. He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers.